So today I thought I would continue the theme that we had last week, which was the importance of faith. And I felt that there was something that I could give that would add a little bit more dimension to the subject. And so we're going to take a look at that today. And it will be focused on a particular individual who is actually quite a good example for us as we go through the story. So let's begin in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 1. And there it says, "Let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God." You know, consider us, look at us, in a sense, in considering the individuals who are being spoken of here, you're going to have to make a judgment. You know, when you're considering them, you're going to make a judgment, which we heard about here. So consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. In verse 2, it says, "Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful." So that's what we're going to talk about, is being found faithful, being stewards and caring and preserving something. That's what stewards do. And Paul and those who served with him, their responsibility was to be found faithful in their stewardship in the serving of the people of God. And he's asking them to consider what their approach is and what they're doing in the church and whether they're living up to that standard. For all of us, life is a series of decisions, and our choices are going to determine eternity. So will you live forever? What we do and what we don't do is going to determine that. And one of the main things that God's looking at is, are we faithful? And God wants us to be found faithful and to understand that subject. So to begin bringing out the subject, let's go back to the time of the judges in 1 Samuel. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 2. And in 1 Samuel chapter 2, the judge is a man by the name, he is also the high priest. His name is Eli. And we know that Eli was associated with Samuel. The boy Samuel grew up in his household, and so he developed and grew and eventually became a judge in Israel. But anyway, Eli was the judge and high priest, and God was looking at him and came to a judgment. So Eli, in being a judge, had two sons who, because he was the judge, used his authority to exert themselves and impact the people of Israel. And unfortunately, they were unscrupulous men who took advantage of people and did not use the office of their father well. And their father knew that they weren't living up to what God wanted to be done. They weren't faithful. They weren't faithful stewards. And God knew of this, and I'm sure he relayed that failure to Eli, and Eli refused to deal with them. His sons Hophni and Phinehas were not people of character, not men of faith. And so God sent a man to tell him, "You've been judged, and there's a penalty because you have not dealt with your sons as you should have." And he goes on to say that he's going to be punished for this, and it's not going to be just to Eli and his sons, but it's going to impact future generations that are descended and related to Eli. He says in verse 34, "Now this shall be a sign to you that will come upon your two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them." And so what happened was the people of Israel were defeated by the Philistines, and they captured the Ark of the Covenant, and Eli's two sons were killed in that battle. And then Eli, when he heard that his two sons had died, fell back and broke his neck, and that was the end of his service as a priest and as a judge in Israel. But God's also looking forward into the future. And he says, then in verse 35, "Then I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and in my mind. I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before me, before my anointed." Now, the anointed could be the king, because the king was God's anointed. Saul and David were both God's anointed, and all of the kings descended from them. And it could also refer to the Messiah, because Messiah just means, in Hebrew, the anointed one, which we would know to be Jesus Christ. And what is God talking about here? He's talking about forever. He's not talking about some short-term outcome. He's talking about forever. So God will raise up a faithful high priest in place of Eli, because Eli and his sons were not faithful. And God wanted someone who would walk faithfully before him. Their attitude would be, "Not my will, but your will be done, God in heaven." God in time found such a priest. God in time found such a priest. And like God found David to be a man after his own heart, God looking for the same faithfulness in a man to serve as priest. And what we're going to talk about today is the story of that man. The man's name is Zadok, Z-E-Z-A-D-O-C, Zadok. And I sometimes wondered how to say it because I don't speak Hebrew, but I looked it up and it is Zadok. And it means just or righteous, just or righteous. And we'll see that quality was something that you find in Zadok. And Zadok served as the high priest during the time of David and Solomon. And Zadok was faithful to in his service to God and to those rulers. So let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 15. 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 15. There it says, "So David reigned over all Israel, and David administered judgment and justice to all his people." And it's talking about the people who are in power here, David being the king. Verse 16, "Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the army, and Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. And Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech, the son of Abiathar, were priests." So, interestingly, you have two high priests at this particular time. There's no indication of why that was the case. But there, at this time in David's reign, you have two high priests. Now, and it's interesting as you look at the history of Israel and the history of the kings of Israel, and even in the history of King David, there are reigns that are eventually filled with rebellion and controversy and murder and all sorts of bloody things that took place. And that seems to be common with kings, or at least up to a certain time was. And I know that Liz and I went to a presentation that was given at the Museum of Arts, and they talked about the Windsors. And if you go back in history and look at the Windsors as you go through their history, you know, they're killing each other, and they just were pretty ruthless because they wanted to rule over the kingdom. And you have this, and as you'll see, we have this kind of thing going on in Israel among the kings. And David being a king, this was sadly one part of the things he had to face. Let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 1. 1 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 1, and continue the story. It says, "Now these are the divisions of the sons of Aaron." And what David did is he divided the priest into divisions so that they would serve at a particular time, and there was an organization to their service in the temple. They weren't there serving all the time, so they served. Basically, there were two times a year that they would serve with their particular group that had been divided into these divisions. And it says the sons of Aaron were Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. So Aaron had these sons. Two of those sons, Nadab and Abihu, they did not follow God's instructions, and God took their lives. But the other three sons continued on. It says, therefore Eleazar and Ithamar ministered as priests. Then David with Zadok of the sons of Eleazar and Ahimelech of the sons of Ithamar divided them according to the schedule of their service. So they both continued to serve as high priest. This is going on, and God has not brought about what he said would come to pass at this point. So the thought that Zadok was also descended from a man by the name of Phinehas, the grandson of Aaron. And why might that be significant? Well, that brings us to a story in Numbers chapter 25, when the people of Israel had come to the brink of the land of promise. So they're at the crossing of the Jordan. They're on the brink of entering the land, and there's been someone who's been desirous of subverting them and bringing them down. He's getting a big payday, because one of the people that was felt threatened by the people of Israel he wanted him to curse Israel, and he said, I can't curse them, but what I can do is I can get them to bring a curse on themselves by sin. So he did that, and Israel suffered the consequences. So what they did is the ladies of Moab enticed the Israelites and got them to become involved in false worship, and God caused the people of Israel to be punished. They knew better, but they were enticed into following in this false religion and not saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And God did take action against them. And and God says in Numbers chapter 25, verse 4, take all the leaders of the people and hang the offenders before the Lord out in the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. So Moses said to the judges of Israel, every one of you kill his men who were joined to Baal of Peor. So whoever was involved with these ladies and went to worship Baal of Peor are to be punished. And so they were punished, and so this is taking place. And one of the leaders in Israel had a relationship with one of these ladies of Moab, and he brought her back into the camp of Israel and went into his tent, and he was going to openly defy God. And so Phinehas noticed this fellow, and his girlfriend went into the tent, and so he got a spear and he went in the tent, and he drove that spear through the two of them. And which, you know, for all of us, that's a pretty gruesome event, but he did it because he was zealous for God and faithful to God. Chapter 25 of Numbers, verse 10. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, has turned back my wrath from the children of Israel. He knew that Israel was being punished because of what Israel was doing and their involvement with these ladies and being enticed away from the true worship of God. And God says, because he was zealous with my zeal among them, so that I did not consume the children of Israel in my zeal, therefore say, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace, and it shall be to him and his descendants after him a covenant of an everlasting priesthood. So that's talking about forever, an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God and made atonement for the children of Israel. So Phinehas is commended, and it's a formative event in the family of Zadok. And the lesson is, that this is an important event. Be zealous for God, stand up for God, be faithful to him. So as you come to David's time, when David sinned against God by entering into a relationship with Bathsheba, committing adultery, this led to chaos in the land of Israel. and eventually led to a rebellion and great distress in the land. So as time went on, David had a son by the name of Absalom, and Absalom was had problems with his father, and he also wanted to be in power, and he sought to undermine David as the king of Israel. And so he did everything he could to undermine David. He may not have been open about it at the beginning, but David wasn't paying attention to it. And eventually he keeps working at it until eventually he has won the hearts of the people of Israel, and they're going to have chosen to follow Absalom rather than David. And David neglected his son and did not have a good relationship with Absalom. And Absalom, unfortunately, led the people of Israel astray. And he went and he cultivated a relationship with them. He did various things that allowed him to ingratiate himself to the people of Israel. And when he had reached a critical mass, when he felt he had enough support, then he led a rebellion. As it says in chapter 15, verse 6, it says, "So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel." He stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And 2 Samuel chapter 15, let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 15, and we see more about how this plays out. Chapter 15, verse 10, "Then Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom reigns in Hebron.' So that, and with Absalom went 200 men invited from Jerusalem, and they went along innocently and did not know anything. Then Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy grew strong, for the people with Absalom continually increased in number." So Absalom is fomenting this rebellion to topple his father from the throne. And he seeks the help of a man by the name of Ahithophel. And Ahithophel had been a counselor to David for a long time. However, Ahithophel had been alienated from David because guess who was related to Ahithophel? Bathsheba. Bathsheba was a relative of Ahithophel, and I'm sure that the relationship that David took up with Bathsheba did not help his relationship with Ahithophel. So the seeds were sown where he was upset, and eventually he aligned himself with Absalom. Chapter 15, verse 13, 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 13. "Now a messenger came to David, saying, 'The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom.' So they told the king, 'This is the state of things now.' So David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, 'Arise and let us flee, or we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring disaster upon us.'" So they could see, okay, we're not going to turn the tide here. The tide is against us, and we need to get out of Jerusalem and get away before we're wiped out. So they made haste to get out of the city, and so there's this battle going on for power in the land of Egypt. And people are having to make a choice to follow Absalom or to follow David. And Absalom has won the hearts of many individuals. And that wasn't just the case of the general population, but that was the case with the people who were in rulership positions in the land. Should we remain loyal to David, or should we align ourselves with Absalom? So chapter 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 23. "And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people crossed over." And, you know, that's exactly what happens when you have a civil war. Nobody wins in the long run, and it creates havoc in your society. The Civil War was a terrible, terrible war. And people are most intense in a civil war, more intense than fighting a foreign enemy. Brother against brother is the worst. So people wept, And it says, the king himself crossed over the brook Kidron, and all the people crossed over toward the way of the wilderness. So they're all leaving. They're going to cross the Kidron. They're going to go up the hill there, and they're going to make their way out into the wilderness and seek to get away from Absalom and those who are aligned with him. Verse 24, there was Zadok also and all the Levites with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. So Zadok had chosen to be loyal to David, and being the priest, he had the Ark of the Covenant with him, and he was going to take it and go out with David. And they set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had finished crossing over from the city. So both of the high priests were loyal to David at this point. Then the king said to Zadok, carry the Ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back and show me both it and his dwelling place. But if he says thus, I have no delight in you, here I am, let him do to me as seems good to him. So David's attitude, even in this dire situation, was God's will be done. Because I don't know at this point whether it's God's will that I return to rule the kingdom or not. And, David had, in a way, fallen down in his responsibilities as king and didn't pay any attention to his son nor all of the things that were going on. Obviously, somebody should have seen this and maybe given him a heads up, but that's not what was happening. So anyway, he is making his way toward the wilderness to find a way to stay out of the way of Absalom. And the king also said to Zadok the priest, are you not a seer? Return to the city in peace. And your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, your son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I will wait in the plains and the wilderness until word comes from you to inform me. Therefore, Zadok and Abiathar carried the Ark of God back to Jerusalem, and they remained there. They were loyal to David. And their responsibility was to relay to David what was happening and whether he needed to continue to get away and hide out. And so these two sons of Ahimaaz and Jonathan were to go out and carry a message to David in that regard. And so you have these two fellows that are going to carry a message from the two high priests, and you also coming into the story in chapter 17 is Ahithophel. So Ahithophel was a quite wise individual, and he said, let me take 12,000 men and go out after David, and we're going to go out after him right away because David's going to be tired. David's not going to be able to have things together the way that he should in order to defend himself, and we will let everybody go but capture the king or kill the king, and then everything will move forward for Absalom. So that was his advice, but there was an individual who was still loyal to David who was giving advice, and Absalom wanted his advice as well. So if Ahithophel gives the wise advice, but Absalom says, let me talk to Hushai and see what he has to say and see if he corroborates what Ahithophel says. Well, sure enough, Hushai does not think that that's a good idea. So, and amazingly, I think under God's influence, they listened to Hushai and did not go after David immediately and allowed him to get away and to consolidate his position. But Hushai was faithful to David, and he advised against going after David right away. And I'm sure God had an influence over that particular decision. So then once they realized the lay of the land, the two high priests sent their two sons out to warn David to keep moving, stay out of the way of Absalom, because you're going to have to be on the run for a while. So the two sons went out, and they begin following the two sons and sought to stop them from being able to get to David and relay the message. But somebody hid the two sons in a well, so they went down the well when Ahithophel and the troops showed up. They were in the well. They didn't notice them. They went on, and they weren't able to stop them from carrying a message to David. So then you come to, you have two high priests that are ruling here that are carrying out the responsibilities of priests in Israel. And eventually Absalom is defeated. And so you still have two high priests that are ruling. And in 2 Samuel 20, it talks about the different rulers, and Zadok and Abiathar were the priests. They continued that responsibility. Now we come further along in the story, and we come to a point where David is old. David is not going to be king for much longer. He's going to die. And so not only does David realize this, but other people who want the throne realize that also. So one of David's sons, who was born after Absalom, wanted the throne. And so he decides, I'm going to take the throne because my father is old, my father is feeble, and we can be able to get everything in place before he's wakes up enough to be able to take action. So they so Adonijah was the man's name that was over the army, and others who were in positions of authority also aligned themselves with Adonijah. Basically, they felt David's old. David's not going to be able to turn this back, and this guy's a comer, so we'll support him. So you had Joab, who was head of the army, supporting him. You had, Abiathar support Adonijah in taking over the throne, and you had various other leaders taking over the throne as well. So up to this point, Joab and Abiathar had been loyal to David, but that all changes when Adonijah begins to agitate for the throne. And so going through the story, let's pick it up in 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 9. So there comes a certain point, you know, it's just like if you look at the rebellion of Satan, there comes a certain point when it's time to make your move. And Adonijah is that of the same mentality. There's a time for me to make my move. So 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 9. It says, "And Adonijah sacrificed sheep and oxen and fattened cattle by the stone of Zoheleth, which is in En-Rogel. He also invited all his brothers, the king's sons, and all the men of Judah, the king's servants. And he did not invite Nathan the prophet, Benaiah, the mighty men, or Solomon his brother." So he's by inviting all these people, he's sending a message. So everybody's gone. Where did everybody go? They didn't invite you. So that's telling you something. It's interesting. Anyway, Nathan goes to Bathsheba and talks to her because David had actually promised her that her son, Solomon, would be king. And although he made that promise, he's not dealt with that and made that very clear. So Nathan goes to Bathsheba. We read of that in 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 11. "So Nathan spoke to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, saying, 'Have you not heard that Adonijah, the son of Haggith, has become king? And David, our Lord, does not know it?'" Uh-oh, he's become king. That's not a good thing to report. And verse 12, "Come, please let me now give you advice that you may save your own life and the life of your son Solomon." So this is getting to the point where it's a dire circumstance. And he said, let me give you some advice to save your life and that of Solomon. And he said, "Go immediately to King David and say to him, 'Did you not, my lord, O king, swear to your maidservant, saying, assuredly your son Solomon shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne? Why then has Adonijah become king?'" Well, I'm sure David was surprised by that. When did this take place? Well, David, being old and not being healthy, was probably not as aware as he should have been. Verse 15, so Bathsheba went into the chamber of the king, and she relayed this merit, this message. And so the king listened. And then in verse 17, then she said to him, "My lord, you swore by the Lord your God to your maidservant, saying, 'Assuredly Solomon, your son, shall be king, shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne.'" So he had made that promise, but now here's Adonijah pushing forward with his attempt to become king. And so she relays this to King David, and then David begins to take action. And so anyway, chapter 1 of 1 Kings, verse 22. It says, "And just then, when she was talking with the king, Nathan the prophet also came in." So Bathsheba went in and talked to David, and then in comes Nathan to reemphasize the point. Verse 23, "So they told the king, saying, 'Here is Nathan the prophet.' And when he came in before the king, he bowed down before the king with his face to the ground. And Nathan said, 'My lord, O king, have you said, Adonijah shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne? For he has gone down today, and he has sacrificed oxen and fattened cattle and sheep in abundance, and has invited all the king's sons and the commanders of the army and Abiathar the priest. And look, they are eating and drinking before him, and they say, "Long live King Adonijah!" But he has not invited me." So that's a pretty telling circumstance that he's not invited Nathan, me, your servant, nor is it Zadok the priest, nor Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, nor your servant Solomon. He hasn't invited any of those individuals because he's going to cut them out, and probably if there was an intervention, they would have been eliminated. And verse 27 says, "Has this thing been done by my lord the king, and you have not told your servant who should sit on the throne of my lord the king after him?" Well, he had maybe said something, but he had not made it clear to the leadership and to the people of Israel. 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 32, David begins to take action. And he says, call to me Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada. So they came before the king, and the king also said to them, "Take with you the servants of your lord, and have Solomon my son ride on my mule, and take him down to Gihon," which is where there was a spring. And so he was designated as the king, and notice he's to ride on the king's mule. And riding on the king's mule signaled to the people of Israel who was to be their next king. And as you look at who came into Jerusalem on riding on a donkey, who was that? Jesus Christ. The same message by his entering Jerusalem in that way was being made. Verse 34, "Therefore, Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet, anoint him king over Israel, and blow the horn and say, 'Long live King Solomon.' Then you shall come up after him, and he shall come and sit on my throne, and he shall be king in my place, for I have appointed him to be ruler over Israel and Judah." So again, as you look at this story, the challenge is for Zadok, will he be faithful to the king, or will he abandon the king for his own political advantage? And what Zadok chose to do was to be faithful the whole way through. He was faithful to David. So they anointed Solomon to be king and blew the trumpet, and the words, "Long live King Solomon," were uttered, and Solomon was king. And chapter 1, verse 40, "And all the people went up after him, and the people played the flutes and rejoiced with great joy, so that the earth seemed to split with their sound." So there was great joy in Israel in celebration of Solomon becoming king. So what did, so Solomon is now the king. So what does he say to Abiathar? that we learn of that in 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 26. It says, "And to Abiathar the priest, the king," that is Solomon, "said, go to Anathoth, to your own fields, for you are deserving of death. You joined the rebellion against me and sought to topple me as king. But I will not put you to death at this time, because you carried the ark of the Lord before my father David, and because you were afflicted every time my father was afflicted." So Abiathar, up until the time of Adonijah, was faithful. But with Adonijah seeking the kingship, Abiathar joined with him. He thought that was the better way to go, instead of being faithful to David to the end. Zadok chose a very different path. He chose a very different path. So Solomon removed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, that he might fulfill the word of the Lord which he spoke concerning the house of Eli at Shiloh. Abiathar was no longer high priest. And the king put Benaiah the son of Jehoiada in his place over the army, and he put Zadok as the priest in place of Abiathar. And the prediction made in Samuel came true. Now, what does that mean when you're thinking of this in longer terms? Interestingly, if you turn to Ezekiel chapter 40, when God talked about the high priest and what he was looking for after the failure of Eli, what did he say? "I'm looking for somebody who will follow me and be faithful." And here's what's going to play out in the millennial kingdom. In Ezekiel 40, we're talking about the temple of God that's going to be built in Jerusalem after Christ's return. And it gives us a few details, some of them about Zadok and where he will serve. Exodus chapter 40, verse 46. It says, "The chamber which faces north is for the priests who have charge of the altar." And he says, "These are the sons of Zadok from the sons of Levi who come near the Lord to minister to him." So God has remembered Zadok, and he's going to allow his descendants to serve in the temple of God. Zadok will be there. He will be a spirit being serving God in that conduct, in that context. Ezekiel chapter 44, verse 15. There it says, "But the priests, the Levites, the sons of Zadok, the offspring of Zadok, who kept charge of my sanctuary, when the children of Israel went astray from me, they shall come near to me to minister to me, and they shall stand before me to offer to me the fat and the blood, and they shall enter my sanctuary, and they shall come near my table to minister to me, and they shall keep my charge." And finally, in chapter 48, verse 10, there it says, "The sanctuary of the Lord shall be in the center." So this is describing the temple that will be built after Christ's return. "It shall be for the priest of the sons of Zadok who are identified, who have kept my charge, who did not go astray when the children of Israel went astray, as the Levites went astray." And what God has done is he took note of Zadok. He took note of how he was faithful in the various crises that occurred in the time of David, and he was always loyal throughout the crises. He was faithful throughout it all. And God kept notes on that, and God said, "I'm going to reward him and his descendants." Let's go to Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10. One final passage, and then we'll look at some lessons. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10. "For God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love, which you have shown toward his name, and that you have ministered to the saints and do minister." So God takes notes. God remembers. "And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end, that you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises." And it tells us that God notices. And sometimes as we look at the situation, it's not always perfectly clear which path that we should follow. And we've had some of those circumstances happen in our time, in my time in the church, unfortunately. But we are to be faithful, and you have to make a choice. It's like somebody told me a few years ago. He said, whatever choice you make, you better make sure that it's based upon the Scriptures. Whatever choice you make, make sure it's based upon the Scriptures. It's not based on your friends. It's not based on who you know or any of that kind of thing. It's based upon God's Word, and you're being loyal to God. That's something that we've all got to make decisions on. And some things to think about as we consider the lessons here. There are three of them. The first lesson is be faithful. Be faithful. Be faithful in the sense of whatever you're challenged with, be faithful in what is least, and then you'll be proven to be faithful in what is much more significant. Zadok was this kind of a man. Second point is do what's right. Do what's right. That's where you know what the Bible has to say and you seek to do what's right. And always do what's right, because you will be rewarded as a result. And final point, start strong. Start strong and stay strong. Like we're told in Luke chapter 9, verse 62, but Jesus said to him, no one having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. So we want to be faithful in whatever comes our way. And finally, in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 1, I'll just read it again as we summarize. Let man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. So we want to live lives that God is going to find us to be faithful, because our choices determine eternity. So let's be faithful to the end, be faithful so that we can one day be a part of God's kingdom forever. And God will know that we're faithful and that he's can count on us, and we're ready to serve in his kingdom. So I thought that's an interesting story there about Zadok, and hopefully you found it profitable. So thanks, everybody, for your attention. Thanks for facing the challenge of the wind and the rain and flooding and all of that. So good to see all of you, and please have a great remainder of the Sabbath, and we'll see you again next week.